Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a really close look at Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha.
Right.
Our goal here is to try and understand what makes him such a legendary investor, but maybe more importantly, how his, core principles can be valuable for you.
Yeah, whether you're managing investments or just, well, navigating your own career path.
Exactly. We've got a fascinating stack of info to unpack. It really shows the journey of someone pretty unique.
It really does. And what's so striking about Buffett, I think, is just how early that passion started. You know, for business, for investing, it wasn't like a sudden light bulb moment. It was more this gradual thing, this mind just fascinated by how value works, how it grows.
You really see hints of it right from the beginning. Born in Omaha, 1930, middle of three kids.
And this is during the Great Depression, remember?
Right. Even with that backdrop, the entrepreneurial drive was just there. He's only seven. Finds this book at the library, 1,000 Ways to Make $1,000.
Wow. At seven.
Yeah. And it apparently just sparked something. It wasn't just a storybook for him. It was like a blueprint.
That really tells you something, doesn't it? A kid that young being drawn to, well, such a practical guide to earning money. He wasn't just daydreaming. He was actively trying to figure out how the whole economic thing worked.
And he didn't just read about it. He was out there doing it. Selling gum, delivering Coca-Cola, weekly magazines, you name it.
Little hustler.
Totally. And by 11 years old, he makes his first stock market investment, buys shares for himself and for his sister, Doris.
Incredible. That early move, even, you know, with probably pretty small capital.
Oh, sure.
It just shows this like instinctive grasp of ownership of potential returns. That's a concept a lot of adults don't even get until way later.
And what really stands out, I think, is by the time he's 15, he's pulling in over $175 a month delivering the Washington Post.
Which was serious money back then.
Absolutely. And his first thought isn't, you know, how can I spend this? No. At 14, he'd already invested $1,200 of his earnings in a 40-acre farm.
See, that just highlights a key part of his whole approach, even then, capital allocation.
Right.
He understood putting resources into assets, things that could generate future value, instead of, you know, spending it right away.
So it's maybe not surprising his high school yearbook basically called it, said he likes math, a future stockbroker.
Pretty much nailed it.
But interestingly, he wasn't actually that keen on college at first. It was really his dad pushing him, strongly encouraging him to go. And that decision turned out to be, well, really important for his development.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, doesn't it, how things might have gone differently without that nudge. I mean, he clearly had the raw talent, but that formal education, it exposed him to ideas, to people.
Big time.
That really shaped his thinking later on.
Okay, so let's talk about that education path. He starts at the Wharton School, 1947, but it wasn't really his scene.
Yeah, apparently not the right fit for him.
So he transfers back home, University of Nebraska, gets his business degree there in 51. But here's a real turning point, you know. He applies to Harvard Business School and gets rejected.
Rejected from Harvard.
Yeah.
It's almost funny looking back.
Isn't it? But it's like that classic story, right? What looks like a setback.
Ends up opening a totally different, maybe better, door.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because that rejection led him straight to Columbia University.
And guess who was teaching there?
His hero, Benjamin Graham.
Dingo. So he gets his master's in economics at Columbia, also in 51, studying directly under Graham. This is where he just absorbs the ideas from The Intelligent Investor.
That book had already hit him hard. But studying with the man himself, that mentorship really became the bedrock, the absolute foundation of Buffett's whole value investing philosophy.
So Graham's big idea was?
Well, Graham, people call him the father of value investing, right? His whole thing was finding stocks, securities that were trading way below their intrinsic value.
Their real worth.
Exactly. What the company's actually worth. Deep down, forget the market buzz or the daily price swings. Find the bargains based on fundamentals.
And it wasn't just theory for Buffett. After Columbia, he worked for a bit at his dad's firm, Buffett Falk. And then, crucially, he actually joins Graham's own company, Graham Newman Corporation, as a securities analyst. Imagine that.
Talk about learning from the master.
Yeah.
That real world experience, actually applying Graham's ideas in the market day to day.
Invaluable.
Totally. It took those concepts from the textbook right into practice.
Yeah.
And you have to think, that gave him the confidence eventually to go out on his own.
Which he did. 1956, he heads back to Omaha. And get this, he's got over $174,000 in savings.
Wow. In 56 money. That's a serious chunk of change.
Right. And he starts Buffett Partnerships LTD, and it grows fast. By 57, he's got 3 partnerships. By 59, 6 of them.
That shows people were trusting him early on.
Definitely. Suggests his picks were already getting results, you know, attracting more money, proving he knew what he was doing.
And speaking of key connections, 1959 is also a huge year. Mm. He meets Charlie Munger.
Ah, yes. At a business lunch, apparently.
And that meeting kicks off, well, probably one of the most important partnerships in business history.
It's hard to overstate Munger's influence, isn't it?
Absolutely critical, because Buffett initially was very much a pure Graham disciple. You know, buy super cheap, almost cigar butt companies.
Right.
But Munger helped broaden that view. He pushed Buffett to see the value in paying a fair price for a truly great company, one with strong management, a lasting competitive edge.
Even if it wasn't dirt cheap.
Yes, Lee. That shift, that evolution in thinking was just massive for his later success with much bigger investments.
Okay, so let's really dig into this investment philosophy that, you know, became his signature. The core, like we said, value investing from Graham. Find those undervalued stocks.
But what's key with Buffett is the long-term perspective he layers on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's famous for quoting Graham, saying something like, "In the short run, the market's a voting machine."
Popularity contest.
But in the long run, it's a weighing machine.
Right.
It highlights his focus on what a business is actually worth over time, not just its fleeting popularity.
Yeah, he thinks about buying stock like he's buying the whole business, or at least a piece of it, not just a ticker symbol to flip.
Exactly. He wants quality companies, solid foundations, businesses that can keep earning money year after year.
And he is incredibly patient. I mean, holding things for decades sometimes, just riding out the market's craziness.
That patience is just fundamental. It lets the real value shine through eventually. And it stops you making those emotional mistakes. You know, buying high, selling low, trying to time everything perfectly.
So when he's looking at a company, what's he focusing on? You mentioned metrics.
Yeah, return on equity, ROE, is a big one. He looks at it over a good stretch, like 5 or 10 years.
Why so long?
Well, it shows you how consistently the company makes profit from the money shareholders have invested. You want to see that steady performance, not just like a one-hit wonder year.
Makes sense. Filters out the noise.
Right. And you might see a company with a huge ROE one year because they sold something off. But Buffett wants that sustainable, owner-focused return generation.
He also looks closely at debt, right? The debt-to-equity ratio.
Oh, definitely. He generally likes companies that grow using their own earnings, their equity, rather than loading up on debt. A strong balance sheet is huge for him.
Safer.
Much safer. Mm-hmm. Gives him a cushion if times get tough, more freedom to act on opportunities, financial strength, weathering storms. That's paramount.
And then there's the famous mantra, rule number one, never lose money. Rule number two, never forget rule no one.
Lapses.
Yeah. Now, obviously, investments fluctuate. You can lose money temporarily. But what's he really getting at there?
It's about the mindset.
Right.
It forces you to do incredibly thorough research, really understand the risks, try to minimize the chance of a permanent loss of your capital. It's about being super careful, super selective.
It's not about avoiding any risk, but avoiding dumb risk.
Precisely. Understanding the downside just as much, maybe more, than the potential upside, which leads right into his idea of the circle of competence.
Yes. Love this one. He sticks to what he knows.
Religiously. He'll readily admit if he doesn't understand a business or an industry, no matter how trendy or hot it seems.
Tech stocks for a long time, for example.
Exactly. He's not afraid to say, nope, not for me, I don't get it, and just pass. Even if everyone else is jumping in.
That discipline, staying in your lane, has got to be a massive reason for his consistency over, like, decades.
Huge. It stops him getting swept up in hype or making bets in areas where he can't properly judge the odds.
Okay, let's talk Berkshire Hathaway, because this is maybe the most amazing part of the story. Turning this, like, dying textile mill.
Yeah, struggling big time.
Into this absolute behemoth, this massive holding company. He started buying shares back in 62. Initially just saw it as, you know, another undervalued play.
Right. Classic Graham-style investment at first. But then again, Munger's influence comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Munger helped him see that, okay, the textile part is fading, sure. But the company still generates some cash. And that cash could be used elsewhere.
Strategically reinvested.
Exactly. Into better businesses. Mm. So by 1965, Buffett gains control of Berkshire. The textile mills eventually close. Yeah. But he uses the cash flow.
Especially from insurance, right? That was key.
Absolutely key. Insurance companies collect premiums up front, but pay claims later. That time gap creates float.
Which is basically...
It's like having this big pool of money you can invest for Berkshire's benefit before you potentially have to pay it out in claims.
Mm-hmm.
Often at very low cost. It's a fantastic source of investment capital.
Genius. And that float fueled the expansion.
It was a game changer. It gave him this huge, relatively stable pile of capital to buy into all sorts of other things. Railways, energy, See's Candies, Coca-Cola, Apple eventually. Just incredible diversification.
And he's been chairman and CEO since 1970, spearing the ship the whole time.
An unbelievable run. It really shows his long-term vision, his leadership.
And the results speak for themselves. That failing mill shares worth maybe 18 bucks in the mid-60s.
Now hundreds of thousands of dollars per share.
It's almost impossible to wrap your head around that kind of return. Decades of just smart, patient capital allocation.
It really is.
And the annual meetings in Omaha, the Woodstock of capitalism, tens of thousands of people fly in.
It's become this huge pilgrimage, hasn't it? People aren't just going for investment tips anymore. They want that broader wisdom, the Q&A with him and Munger.
Well.
With him now.
Yeah. It shows the immense respect he commands.
Totally. People trust him.
But despite being one of the richest people on the planet, his lifestyle is, well, famously simple.
Oh, yeah. Still lives in the same house in Omaha you bought back in the 50s.
Drives regular cars, eats McDonald's, drinks cherry Coke.
It's pretty grounding, isn't it? Especially today, when wealth often means, you know, mega yachts and private jets everywhere.
It sends a message, right? That maybe extreme wealth doesn't have to change who you are or what you value.
Definitely. That fulfillment maybe doesn't come from just stacking up more and more expensive stuff.
And then there's his philanthropy, which is just staggering.
Monumental. In 2006, he pledges to give away almost all of his fortune, mostly via the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
And he co-founded the Giving Pledge, pushing other billionaires to commit at least half their wealth too.
It's truly inspiring, setting such a powerful example. It's like he understands that beyond a certain point, that money can do way more good for society than it can for him or his family.
His view on inheritance is interesting too. That quote about giving his kids enough money so they feel they can do anything, but not so much that they could do nothing.
Yeah, I love that quote. Such a balanced way to think about it. Providing support, sure, but not so much that it kills their own drive, their own ambition to make something of themselves.
Right. Let them forge their own path.
Exactly.
Okay, beyond the big picture stuff, there were some fun facts, some quirks about him.
Oh, yeah, the Coca-Cola obsession.
Drinks like 5 cans a day, supposedly. Says he's 1/4 Coca-Cola.
Laughs. And, of course, Berkshire owns a huge chunk of Coca-Cola stock.
Talk about eating your own cooking. Or drinking it, I guess.
Yeah, it's a perfect example of investing in what you understand and, well, clearly enjoy. Maybe not doctor recommended, but
hey, it works for him. And the sweet tooth doesn't stop there. Ice cream for breakfast.
Apparently. It just adds to the image, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This incredibly successful guy who still enjoys the simple, maybe slightly unconventional pleasures.
Here's one that surprised me. He had a terrible fear of public speaking for years.
Really? Given how much he speaks now at the meetings and things.
Yeah. He was terrified. He actually took a Dale Carnegie course to overcome it. And supposedly, the certificate from that course is the only diploma he actually displays in his office.
Wow. Not the Wharton degree, not Columbia?
Nope. The Dale Carnegie certificate. It says a lot about, you know, facing your fears, investing in yourself.
That's actually really inspiring.
Yeah.
Shows that even someone like him had to work hard to overcome challenges. It wasn't all just natural talent.
And his daily routine. It's legendary for its consistency. Spends something like 80% of his workday just reading.
80%. Reading what?
Annual reports, financial statements, newspapers, books. Just constantly absorbing information.
He calls it compound knowledge.
Right. Yeah, like compound interest. That's how knowledge builds up. You just keep adding to it day after day.
That dedication to learning, even now in his 90s, is just fundamental. It's a huge lesson for all of us, really. The world changes. You got to keep learning.
And that leads us nicely into some of his timeless wisdom, often captured in these great quotes, like the one on reputation.
Oh, yeah. It takes 20 years to build a reputation and 5 minutes to ruin it.
Powerful. If you think about that, you'll do things differently. It makes you pause, doesn't it?
It really does. It hammers home the importance of integrity, of ethical behavior, not just in business, but, well, everywhere. Trust is so easily broken.
Or his super simple definition of risk. Rule no one, never lose money. Rule no two, never forget. Rule no one.
Chuckles. Seems almost too simple, but it underpins everything. That cautious, deliberate approach. Preserve your capital first.
And patience. The stock market is a device for transferring money from the impatient to the patient.
Oof. That one is home in today's world,
yeah.
right? Everyone wants everything instantly.
Yeah. It's a great reminder that trying to get rich quick usually doesn't work, but discipline and patience can pay off hugely over time. How about choosing investments? It's far better to buy a wonderful company at a fair price than a fair company at a wonderful price. That was a shift from pure Graham, wasn't it?
Big shift. Influenced by Munger. It's recognizing that truly great businesses, the ones with durable advantages, excellent managers, they're worth paying up for a bit.
Because they'll likely grow more over the long haul.
Exactly. Their long-term potential can outweigh finding just any old mediocre company, even if it looks like a statistical bargain right now. Quality matters.
And finally, this one about temperament. Success in investing doesn't correlate with IQ. Once you have ordinary intelligence, what you need is the temperament.
To control the urges that get other people into trouble in investing.
Yes. So crucial.
It's not about being the smartest person in the room.
Not at all. It's about emotional discipline. Can you stay rational when everyone else is panicking? Can you be patient when everyone else is chasing quick gains? That's the real differentiator.
So, thinking about Buffett's whole story, what are the big takeaways for you listening right now?
Well, first, definitely the power of patience. Just immense. Building anything worthwhile takes time. Wealth, career, whatever. His long view is such a lesson.
Absolutely. Second, that commitment to just keep learning, always.
Never stop. Buffett shows that curiosity, that drive to understand more, pays off massively throughout life.
Third, gotta be integrity, right? His whole career is built on ethical dealing, on transparency. That builds trust, and trust is invaluable.
Couldn't agree more. It's the foundation.
And maybe finally, this idea that you don't have to completely change who you are to achieve amazing things. Yeah, his humility, staying connected to his roots in Omaha. It shows you can reach incredible heights and still be, well, yourself, stay true to your values.
So Warren Buffett's life, it's way more than just a story about getting rich.
Oh, much more. It's about purpose, integrity, and just deep wisdom.
And those principles, patience, learning, integrity, being authentic,
yeah,
they aren't just for investing, are they? They can make any life richer.
Absolutely. Doesn't matter what field you're in. That long-term vision, that dedication to growth, sticking to your ethics, being true to yourself, powerful stuff.
So maybe a final thought for you to consider. How can you take those Buffett principles and apply them, not just to your money, but to building the kind of life you really want?
A deep dive worth taking.
Definitely. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.